From the Land de Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of April, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. A bit later in the program, Joe Jansen will join us, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, to discuss basis and movement of grain and how basis helps to make that happen, and how it really does flow across the United States. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That can certainly make bases pop. We'll do that with Mike Tenora. He is at T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. We'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, just a quick reminder, the markets are closed tomorrow in observance of the Easter holiday weekend. They'll open again for trade for the Monday session. The Closing Market Report will air tomorrow, though it will be the Commodity Week program. And our panelists tomorrow will include Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Marketing, Brian Split of AgMarket.net, and Chip Nellinger at Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Here are how the numbers finished in Chicago for this Thursday, the last trading day of the week at 6:43 and a half, down 9 and a quarter in the May contract for corn, July at 6:19 and three quarters, 7 and three quarters lower, and December at 5:56 and three quarters, down 4 cents for the corn. May soybeans 18 and a half lower, 14.92 and a half the settlement price. July 18.62 and a half, down 15 and a quarter, and November at 13.09 and three quarters, down 6 and a quarter for the afternoon. Bean meal futures at 4:54.30, up $3.70. The bean oil 54.53. down 69 cents on the day. Wheat futures, soft red July at 688, 6 and three quarters lower. The hard red July at 846, up 3 cents on the day. Live cattle futures for the afternoon at $163.10, $2.80. Higher feeders at 205.40, up $3.30. And lean hogs at $88.17.5, down 20 cents on the day. Crude oil for the afternoon at $80.68 a barrel, 7 cents higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil up, or rather down about 7 cents at $2.66, and gasoline on the wholesale price today at $2.80 a gallon. That's down just about a penny for the afternoon. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you, bud?
Oh, I am fine. Are you ready to go to the field?
You know, we're getting there. I would say that if we're able to roll on Monday or Tuesday with the weather's correct, I think that we would be fine to go. We've had a couple of little glitches we're trying to get ready to knock out, but for the most part, everything's serviced and ready to get out there and go.
And so you'll be in the field and running, although you'll be watching the marketplace pretty intently, I would think, during that process. What'd you think of the trade since last Friday's USDA reports?
Disappointing, to be honest with you. Whenever you look at, for instance, last week's numbers, okay, so both corn and beans, you know, we came up with less stocks than what the trade was expecting, which makes sense with the bull spreading that we've seen go on. It makes sense with the basis levels that we've seen. But you know, whenever it gets right down to it, you come in here first of the month, expect maybe some buying to show up on a follow through type action, you know, and just none of it showed up, quite frankly. And so, you know, you didn't see any new buyers that wanted to come in and buy these corn or beans, first of all. Second of all, you know, you look at the new crop situation. I mean, I feel like the USDA is making the assumption that it's going to be very little prevent plant, you know, with pushing 50 million acres of wheat, 87.5 beans and 92 corn. And given the issues that we've got in the upper Midwest and northern plains, I think that's a pretty bold assumption. So I was a little bit disappointed this week, but I think that it shows you that it's going to be a little bit tougher to maybe come by your market rallies this year than what we've seen the last couple of years. And that's kind of been my theme all winter.
Yeah, so I do want to talk about that theme because we've been thinking about whether basis or futures has to carry the day. It sure looks like basis, which remains inverted and has gotten more inverted over the last week than it was previously, might carry the day, but it could still be from a lower level. And that's not good for marketing either corn or soybeans, I suppose.
You know, you've got to think that basis is going to have to do quite a bit of work. So whenever you look at, you know, for instance, you look quite a bit of ground here this week as far as cash corn is concerned, you know, but basis, has it improved much? You know, I haven't seen a whole lot in the way of posted basis improving, but I would say that they're definitely pushing, you know, in some instances for some of this corn especially. And so, you know, I think moving forward, you could pick up some in the way of basis, but I don't know that you're going to pick up everything that you're losing as far as the board's concerned. So I don't know. It's a little bit concerning. You know, I think that as a producer, you've got to understand that you already have awfully good prices. I think the one way that you would definitely not see basis get a whole lot better in the event that the market moves lower is if we just plummet, you know, and if you just plummet, at some point the producer is going to panic, you know, and throw the towel in. And when that happens, it's not a pretty situation. Now, I don't know that we'll see that. We're looking at a very tight situation for old crop. But at the same time, we could look at a pretty massive shift, you know, in what stocks look like if we do end up planting anywhere close to 92 and then Mother Nature cooperates this year.
The markets are closed tomorrow. They won't reopen until after the Easter holiday on Monday's session. What are your expectations and worries about that trading day?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that if we have what appears to be still a big window of planting opportunity and you can get, you know, in the breadbasket of the Midwest, for instance, you know, the I states, if you can get a lot of planters rolling, as you know, Todd, you can sock a ton of acres in the ground rather quickly. And so, you know, if that ends up being the case, then I've got to think there's going to be a pretty decent amount, you know, of pressure on these markets, especially whenever you're talking new crop. Now, one thing's for sure, you know, if we're running in the Midwest for a couple weeks, I've got to think that your basis levels could get pretty interesting. Because I do think some of these end users have been running a little bit tighter than maybe they want to admit. The reason I say that is because, especially on the interior, and I'm saying away from the river, it sure seems to me that a lot of these folks have been pushing for some of these old crop bushels. And so, you know, yes, I haven't seen as much of a reaction since this drop this week. But at the same time, I think that if you get in the field and some of this grain quits moving, you're going to see a on basis.
End user basis likely to be good, as you suggested. Will that be filled by the elevators at this point?
You know, that's a really good question. And so obviously there's some grain that's probably headed to town on quote unquote pre-DP, if you will. I think some of that certainly move, you know, towards your end user, if you will. Whenever it gets right down to it, you know, some of the elevators are going to want to keep grain moving because there's still a decent amount of corn out there on the farm. Now, one thing we got to remember that is pretty apparent is that in Illinois, we've actually seen more corn leave the countryside than what we often do with such a large crop. And a lot of that is because it's been heading west, you know, trying to fill areas that didn't raise near as much corn, you know, as what they typically do.
Hey, thank you very much. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
Absolutely, bud. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like up on our website at willag.org, our Commodity Week program, too. We'll record that this afternoon, post it to the website by about 6 o'clock Central Time this evening. Our panelists this week will include Matt Bennett's colleague, Brian Splitt from AgMarket.net, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and Logan Kimmel with Roach Ag Marketing. We're now joined by Joe Jansen. He is an agricultural economist, part of the FarmDoc team, has written an article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website that explores basis and movement of grain, in this case soybeans, In particular, what happens when grain is short in a given year? I'd like you to define a word for me to begin with. That word is arbitrage. We hear about it on occasion in the marketplace. What does it mean?
It means taking advantage of differences in price. In this case, we're thinking about prices across space. So we imagine two different locations. We imagine the grain is pretty cheap at one location and it's worth more at another. So a spatial arbitrage might take advantage of that price difference by moving grain from the cheap location to the one where the grain's worth more.
And this is what your article is trying to get at. Tell me how you tried to visualize it and what you were hoping and looking to find.
Yeah, so we think about sort of how production varies every year. Where the grain is varies at every harvest. And the market's job is really to get that grain from where it is to where it's needed. And so prices have to adjust. And we see, we plot in the article sort of where was production in 2022. We had, a number of production disruptions, particularly in the Western Corn Belt, where we were a little bit shorter on crop than we would be in a typical year. So the market needed to kind of move commodities to, processing plants in that area to meet their needs. And then we also had this major disruption, which was the low water levels on the Mississippi River. And so the market was kind of working to move the grain from where it was, what we got at harvest, that short crop Western Corn Belt, to where it was needed, which was really right at harvest about getting it to crush plants and keeping it away from the river because we couldn't ship grain down the river. And we see that for relatively small changes in quantity, we see big movements in price. So the market really kind of works, has to do a lot. And that's really, people will say that's basis doing the work of getting the local cash prices at the right level to move grain from where it is to where it isn't.
And in this case, there were really two things at work because the river levels were so low, it backed grain up into the Midwest, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I bet you can see that as well as the higher prices in local bids, especially in those end user spots in the Western Corn Belt.
Yeah, so we see a big, big discount everywhere relative to prices at the Gulf, right? So prices at export terminals on the Gulf of Mexico were pretty high, but prices inland were much, abnormally below that. And then we see the spatial pattern of that kind of varies from what's typical. So we saw, some reasonably decent bids in places where they were short and they had crush plants, kind of places like Kansas and Nebraska. And then much, much lower bids than is typical along the river. The market just trying to discourage movement to the river, at least temporarily, until that sort of low water level situation could resolve itself, which now we know it did resolve itself.
But at the terminals, the export terminals themselves, the bids were very high in an effort to pay more to get people to use either the river or truck or rail.
Yeah, I mean, the global market still needed U.S. soybeans. The problem was it was very, very expensive to get it there. And so that's that arbitrage force. Again, if the cost of transportation, on a per bushel basis is very high, the market has to, the difference between those two prices has to widen out to account for that difference in transportation costs.
What did what you looked at tell you about the market? How well does it work? Does it keep bushels in place sometimes? Does it really move them sometimes? And this was a unique situation where you had three different functions acting as one.
Yeah, you have a lot of moving forces. And that's the kind of the good thing about the market. And sort of the student that I'm working with on this project was trying to really think about, well, could you develop a model to kind of allocate this commodity across space? And it turns out like that's really, really hard to do when you have to account for all these different forces. And the beauty of the market is that it can accomplish that by individual traders working on their out of their own self-interest to sort of think about trying to perform these arbitrage functions. The market does a better job than one person trying to think about like how do I allocate all these beans across space.
So for a producer, say along the Illinois River, and maybe one in the middle of Iowa somewhere, how should they think about this and the marketplace and the information that they're getting related to conditions, drought in the West or wherever that might be, end user need at the export market or at their local crusher or ethanol plant if it's corn. Mm-hmm. How should they think about all of that in their marketing process?
The simple answer I'd give you is know your basis, right? So know what is typical in your local market. And know when the market is sending you a signal that it wants your grain, and act on that signal. So knowing when, you know, when demand is strong and the signal is, you know, a stronger basis, and better cash prices, right? So that basis number says, you know, relative to every other location in the country, relative to any other location in the world, you know, how valuable is grain in this area? And you need to know what's typical, how valuable is grain in your local area, and how does that change across time?
So you can see that literally on the maps that you include in this article, especially in the western part of the Corn Belt.
Yeah, you can see that the market was saying, and shows up even stronger for corn if you looked at the similar maps for corn. The market saying, you know, move grain to the west, which is not, you know, not normally always the case that we need to like move a lot of grain from the eastern Corn Belt to the west. So that the market was saying that in 2022.
Can you see? And I don't know whether this is true or not. The basis, for instance, because of the drought in the western Corn Belt, being stronger to the Mississippi River, a little weaker from there to the Illinois River, and then a little weaker from there on to the east into Ohio, for instance. I'm just trying to get how basis, because once you get to the river's going to divert probably grain flow south.
Yeah, you could see that more for corn in 2020, in say at harvest time in 2022. Than for beans. I mean, and those two markets are different, and they all have their features, right? The one feature of beans is that we export significantly more beans than we do for corn. So the market is always going to want to kind of draw grain, soybeans into that sort of funnel defined by the rivers to get it down to export locations. We will maybe see that change a little bit. We are seeing, you know, the market kind of catching up in terms of like developing processing capacity in production regions like North Dakota, where we typically haven't seen much, if any, bean processing at all. I think we're going to see some of that come online here in 2023, and we'll see, you know, maybe that spatial pattern will change a little bit. And that's the beauty of these markets, is they're always changing and always adapting to kind of account for changes in demand.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. You may read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast on this Friday. Mike Tenura is here with T-Storm Weather. Find them online at tstorm.net. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. We have a lot of ground to cover here in the United States. Let's start with the warmer weather, I suppose, that is coming. Tell me about it across the Midwest.
Well, it is on the way. It won't be here until Saturday and Sunday. But once we get there, temperatures will be in the 60s and 70s across Illinois. In fact, most of the central United States will be way warmer than normal over the course of next week. So we'll see a true taste of spring coming up. We could even see some 70s and 80s in parts of the Corn Belt, with even some 90s out in the Southwest Plains. So the story, Todd, is that topsoil levels are going to warm up quite a bit over the next week or so, and that will certainly feel much better than the way it does today.
The topsoil will warm up in the places where there's not snow, but I'm wondering about the northwestern part of the Corn Belt. What will conditions be like in that area?
Well, they're going to be extremely wet. There's a lot of snow on the ground, and I'm not really sure how to emphasize this enough, but if you look at the depth of snow across eastern North Dakota, parts of South Dakota, and then the northern half of Minnesota, more than 30 inches is on the ground right now. Look at your calendar. It's April 6th. There's very few instances of where you would ever see snow that deep at this time of the year, but that's what happens when you have a lot of snow over the course of the winter, and then you dump 5 to 15 inches of snow on it a couple of days ago. And that snow needs to melt. So this warm weather is going to start that process on Sunday, and that will cause next week to be wet. And it will still be wet the following week and the week after that, because you can't just wipe out 30 inches of snow over the course of a short period of time. On top of that, Todd, we have a system that moves through about 10 days from now, and that should bring at least a little bit of rain and snow to the Dakotas and Minnesota. Now, normally, a little bit of rain or snow wouldn't be too big of a deal, but when you have to melt all this snow, and keep in mind that we're talking about more than 6 inches of water that's frozen in the form of snow up there, we need to melt all of that. So any little bit of rain or snow that we see in the future will just maintain those wet conditions.
Is that system that comes through, is that coming from the northwest? And will it be colder, or is it coming from the southwest? And does that mean something for the hard red winter wheat growing regions in Oklahoma and Kansas as well?
Well, it looks like it'll form a little bit further to the south than recently. Because of that, we should see a little bit of rain for hard red winter wheat in the plains. This next system that moves through essentially becomes a threat for rain on next Friday and then continuing through Monday. So we're talking about the April 14th to 17th timeframe. Now, the big uncertainty with this system is how fast will it move and also what will its exact path be? Regardless of how those two factors play out, the one limiting factor that we have for heavy rainfall is that an upper level system is more than likely going to be located near the Gulf of Mexico. If that happens, then that will prevent southerly winds from forming, and that will prevent tropical air from feeding into the plains. So when this system arrives, more than likely, we will see some rain and some thunderstorms. But as far as getting a big drought buster, even though it's always a possibility when you see this type of system, the probability is fairly low. The more likely scenario is for some rain and storms to form, and we'd end up with maybe a half of an inch to an inch. Now, there certainly will be a great rain event for hard red winter wheat, considering how dry it is from southern Kansas on to the south. But keep in mind, Todd, the climate is getting wetter every day as we move forward. So even if we get 1 inch of rain over the next 2 weeks, that's only normal for this time of the year. We need to get more than 1 inch of rain to start eating into some of these deficits. And these deficits go back 6, 7, 8 months. So it's not going to happen with this system, no matter how much rain we get. But we'll take whatever we can get. And at least some is on the way, but probably not a drought buster.
Let's switch continents and growing regions. In Brazil, the climate, rather than like here in the United States, where things should get wetter as we go forward, should get drier going forward. What do you have in the way of concerns as it relates to the second crop or Safrinha corn?
Well, we have to always be aware of what you just noted, which is that the climate does turn a lot drier, especially for the northern half to northern two-thirds of corn as they move through April and especially throughout May. At this point in time, though, there's not a whole lot of concern because it has been raining a little bit here and there, and there are some decent rains on the way with a couple of cool fronts moving through. That southern third of corn does not have a dry season and a rainy season. They pretty much get around 5 to 6 inches of rain in any month of the year, whether it's the winter or whether it's the summer. The potential concern there is that it hasn't rained much over the last 2 to 3 weeks, and even though there will be storms over the next few days, it does dry out again once we get into next week. And it doesn't look like there's a whole lot behind that either. So we could be in a situation where the northern half to two-thirds of corn is looking pretty good or maybe even great, but the southern part of the crop is looking okay or maybe a little bit subpar. So there's still a lot of moving parts there in Brazil. We'd like to see more rain for everybody. It would be the easiest way to think about it, but it's certainly not a type of situation where everybody is turning dry or everybody's turning wet for that matter.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, have a great Easter, Todd.
You too. Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather, found online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.